This is an interview with Charlie Anderson on the evening of Saturday, March 5th, 1977.
Well, I guess the first question to begin with is, how did you become a sailor? To get into the business?
Well, I started out in Denmark in 1912. We were born a four-masted bark, Viking. And of course, that was as a deck boy. Then you went around the world 2 years. And then of course, when you come back, then you are not a full able-bodied seaman, you're an ordinary seaman. And I went out in the four-master back by the General Gordon. And I became an able-bodied seaman. Then I sailed in the three-master bark as an able. And I say first I sailed as a quartermaster.
Ensigns, did you say?
Uh-huh. Because between that, I sailed in the quartermaster and I sent Cecilius. He was an ammunition carrier in the First World War.
Oh, yeah.
Went over to France to that mission. And he was rigged so we could bring there to New York and then took another load of ammunition across.
Sure.
We had a Navy crew of 126 and six guns on board. But of course, he had nothing to do with running the ship. We had to run the ship that was mercenary.
Why did you decide to become a sailor?
Because I liked it. I wanted to get to sea. Now in Denmark, you either had to go in and learn a trade, become a farmer, or go to sea. Or you learn a trade, you had to learn it for 4 years, and you get no pay for 4 years. Very little if you get anything.
But you got some pay as an apprentice seaman?
Yes, but $3 a month. But you had your food and your lodging, right?
Yeah.
But that's what he paid the most of the ships in those days. On board American ships, the able-bodied seaman only made $25 a month in those days. And the deck boys in American ships, he made the same as we did. So there was there was no high pay. The first time I came into New York, the longshoreman made $2 a day and he worked 10 hours a day.
When was that?
Just before the First World War.
Well, let's see, after the First World War, you stayed in steam, right?
No.
No?
I was born at Team Master Park Anselis. Went down to Buenos Aires, over to South Africa, New York.
So that was the second time you were on the Anselis? That was the second time you were on the
Anselis? No, that was the first time.
Sure.
I mentioned that. See, was the old British General Robinson. I got a picture of that in that. She was there. One of the biggest, heaviest three-master bark to the South World.
Good. Where was she built?
She was built in England. She was on a Norwegian flag when I was there.
You see?
Then I went aboard an American schooner in Durban, South Africa, and took her up to Seattle, Washington.
What was your position on the Anselis? Were you a
seaman?
And on the schooner?
I was a kind of a second mate. Kind of the housekeeper and two mates.
I see.
Six in the crew. A full master back. I mean, foremost woman.
What was her name?
Patrick, that wasn't thing, Cutley. I better
go away.
In that show. Camino.
Wayne.
Balker told me about her when he was out in Seattle. People out there knew her.
She's still there?
And now she's still there. And I say loud to Sea Island in the foremast, it's going to be the name of Mika. Okay, lumbered out to Chile and Peru and went out to the islands, brought it sugar, copra, brought into fish coat.
The Hawaiian islands.
Well, the different islands. If you load the copra, we went into the South Sea Islands. Load of sugar, we went to Hawaii.
Was there ever a time when you wished you weren't a sailor? You wished you were something else?
No. I enjoyed it women enough. It was a very nice, nice life if you took care of yourself and followed the rules.
Good.
If you got away from everything, you didn't see a newspaper, you didn't have any radio, and you didn't know what was going on, you was happy.
So after the Camille, what then?
I went to Omega.
Okay, right. And when was that?
That was about 1921, I guess. Yeah, you won.
I can look it up, I guess, while then.
Approximately.
Then after I left Omega, then I started in steam. There was no more sails. Like sailing them. It's been like it for a long time, but then American India fight. Then I met an old friend of mine. I used to sail with you, skipper, and more. Santa Cecilia, and you was working for the insurance man down the yard. And he took me up to see him, and I went skipping on his scooter. Yeah, the 81st bullet.
Good.
So I won that for a while.
When did you start that?
Huh?
When did you start that?
About 1929, I guess. I stayed with him for quite a while, and he got rid of his going aboard a Kimura and run the Kimura for him, an 85-foot boat. And went fast, whilst he went on, took him in to Warham, to New York in the morning, brought him back in the afternoon.
I see.
And out weekends.
Was it steam-powered or gasoline?
No, she had 2 500 consolidated on gasoline.
Sounds like quite a machine.
She made 28 knots.
What? Well, when did the schooner stop? You were... For a while, you were in Huntington Harbor, right?
Yeah.
Was that the...
Hosides.
That was that.
He had a big house.
I see. But when did you come to know it?
Well, after he sold his boats, I got a job at Dr. Van Reden down in Rochelle to run his school nuts for a couple of years. And then he saw that having me down in Evans, the president of the Royal Bank, wanted a man to run his corner. That's absolutely up here, no way. That's how I get in this. So I was lucky over doing the depression. Didn't pay much.
Good.
So after I get through with that, he saw that. I ran David Lawrence boat for a year and then I started working at Electric Boat number
39. Why was that? Was it that Lawrence couldn't keep the schooner?
No, I didn't want David Lars. He wanted to. There was a power vote, and I didn't like it very much. I know people go on the EP, they ask me, why don't you go home? Stay ashore for a while before which they are. So I went over there as a rigger. And short while I made supervisor, finally I made assistant foreman home. So I figured I'd stay there for a few months, and I stayed there for 25 years.
But yeah. You didn't consider going on another vessel?
Not after I started work order. I was home every night.
Yeah.
A good job.
But even before you left, David launched the schooner.
He had a power. That's why I didn't like
it. Oh, I see.
See, I left the schooner. I went to Bond every year. No, there was nothing to get, you know. There was no boats, no ships. There was no ship sailing here, hardly. Deep water ships, steamers, there was nothing. You know when you pay the captain in 10,000 ton steamer? $250.
Well, had you started a family by then?
Yeah, we got married in 1929.
But.
That's why I like to stay sure. First of you were married, I was never home.
You were still in the steamers then, right?
No, I was yachting, but I was never home there either.
Charlie, on the square riggers that foremast and barks and such. How was the living space arranged?
The most of them had two foxes, one for the starboard, one for the port watch. The crews in the foremaster barque consisted of around 16 or 18 men, split up in two watches. Of course, the watches in those ships was There was no three watches like they have today. Four on and eight off. You had two watches.
True.
So in other words, you had 12 hours every day. In the trade, you were, as a rule, assigned one mast. So you put your bag on your shoulder and your gears, and you went up there, and you went all over that mast that there was a CC never shaped, you renewed it, and took the risk or something to do up there. There's always something. You repaired.
Sure.
When you come down, somebody else went up. First, you get down to the roaring 40s, down there. Of course, then you had to depend on what you did in the trade and knocking up there with brick.
So this is like on a typical voyage, what, from Europe down to...
Whatever we was going, Australia, or whatever we was going, South America. But we always wound up down the roaring 40s after a while to go or something else, you know. So, first you get down there, you had all you could do before you got there to rig up life lines, crossways all over the ship so you could jump up and if a sea came along. And first you was down there, you had all you could do to tend sails and run the ship. It was not like trades. Sometimes a sail split, you had to renew it.
Boom.
If a sail split, you never made it fast. You went right up and then better send it down and put another one up there. You had to keep it going. And then if something broke, well, of course you had to repair it. The real repair jobs were done in trades.
Was there a bosun on the ships?
Oh, yeah.
Who knows? And he was called a bosun.
Yeah, he was called a bosun. There was a bosun and a carpenter.
And how did Did the bosun make a tour of inspection every day or something? How did he keep track of it?
He kept track about it, him and the mates. He was always checking. He had to.
So they'd get up and climb around and look around?
Well, not so much them as the bosun. He would be climbing, but I mean, of course, when he was two in the tree, he didn't bother to say when you were starting to get out of the tree, then he had an inspection and he saw if everything was all right. And then you prepare for the roaring fork.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing up lifelines. If you want, if you had a new sail to want to put up instead of the old one, then you changed it. All that was done before you hit down south. First you get down there, the main thing was to sail. Because sometimes you had two and sometimes three men at a wheel.
Yep.
And after you spend a couple of hours on that way, you didn't want to do anything else for a while. Of course, you had to stand your watches at night time. You had a lookout, the one man standing by. If anything happens, he'd get the rest of the gang out. But they always tried. We have what we call a dog watch between 7 and 8 in the evening. And if anything was supposed to be done for the night, we did it in that hour. If you see the barometer dropped and it expected bad weather, we might take some of the sails in. And if we did it on that hour. If there was nothing to do, like in a trade, you were sitting down praying cards,
something like that.
If you had, you were on call, then I would have an old man in the ship with it, on call, tighten the braces, stop that.
When did the watches start? Or what was the timing?
12, 4, and 8.
And so then that was the 4 to 8 in a day.
There was, but not the Scandinavian ships. The Scandinavian ships, you had one watch from 12 to 7 in the afternoon.
True.
That was to rotate the watches. So the next afternoon, you was up from 12 to 7, and the other gang was on from 12 to 7. After that, there was 8 to 4, 12, 12 to 4, 4 to 8, and 8 to 12, right? Then we had that long watch in the afternoon, so they could rotate them. But the American ship didn't do that. So you was on the morning watch starting, you was on the morning watch finish.
Sure.
Right? There was no rotation there.
I see. But even so, everybody would still be on during a dog watch.
Oh, dog watch. That was 7 day. Everybody was there.
On the American or on both?
No, American could then have.
All right.
Only Scandinavian ships that I know of. You might have had them in the German or British, but I don't think so.
Oh, Charlie, you've talked about having been boarded by Germans in the North Sea and having your own ship set afire.
Well, there was one over, and it was Africa. Three master bark. Took a load of lumber, was heading out Australia. And a German U-boat picked us up. And he told us to get off the ship and to put fire to it. So when he left, he didn't do a good job. We went back on board. Put fire out. Put the sails back on again and headed for our course again, and it was going good to the morning, but then the wind dropped again.
Yep.
And he came up in the meantime to see how he was washing, and he missed us when he knew down well what course we was going. So he caught up with us again about 11 o'clock. So he chased us up again, and he did a good job that time. He brought him bombs and I brought a mast out with him. Made it rigged it.
When was that?
It's around 19.
World War One and when?
Between 14 and 15.
Sure.
This the beginning of the war. So we went in the lifeboat and we headed first. We headed for Norway. We get there and then putting up to the other nor'easter. Police are out of what the heck. That's my step for England. So we headed for England. And then the British destroyer picked us up. And they marked and he brought us into just as we was going into Leith, Scotland. He passed the Danish steamer and going home. He took it on board that steamer to the show. So we went home for a week and then I went out to the General Gordon.
That was when you were us. So you went out to the Africa after
Viking.
After the Viking.
But I went under running out to mention.
Okay. Was there, back to living space, The officers live in separate quarters, I assume.
In the big ships, they had a big quarterdeck. And that quarterdeck covered staterooms for the mates, second mates, and a big mess room back there. She do it, get back there. And then, of course, the skipper's quarters. The skipper's quarters, they were big. He even had a double brass in his quarters. The saloon in those big ships, they were beautiful because they were made sometime to carry passengers to you. So they had a beautiful quarters back at you. Below that was the storeroom, and below that was the sail office, rope luggage.
Now, is this like the Viking?
Yeah, the old one. Yeah, the same. Then they had a house after the mission bath, where they generally slept, cooked, and the sailmaker.
This is above the quarter deck?
No, it is already covered up to quarter deck on the main deck.
I see.
Then they had a big midship house after the foremast. And there they had the two after cabins, plus the bosun and the cabins. And then there was a galley there, too, right in front of that. I went right across the house. Of course, those ships was wide, you know. It's big galleys.
Sure.
And then some of them had a coxswain in front of that for the crew. By the General Gordon, up underneath the forecastle head, they had two forecastles, one for the port boys and one for the start. He was big. There was plenty of room in there. And there was plenty of room without our dealers scrubbed out every morning.
By who? The apprentices?
And the deck boys and stuff. And he was. And the decks were scrubbed white, and so was the rest. Of course, tables were swanished. It was very well set up, and then there was a toilet right after the pots. They had one on each side. Oh, there was some time when the weather was bad, and though you were used to the weather side, you may say that I would be one time. But it was always two, one on each side.
Fine. Would there be any place on the ship that a crew member shouldn't go?
Quarter deck.
Quarter.
Yeah. Except you were in white. When you went up and relieved the man in the wheel, you went up on the weather side. Relieved him, cut a course. He turned around the door to the lee side, the mate, the skipper was there, and can repeat course to them, go to the other side and come down the other side.
Yeah. Any particular reason why the weather side?
Well, he walked up and down the beach.
The officer did. I see.
Fjord Append was used out of weather washing. But when you see them pick one side to walk, you end on the other side. Of course, there's distinction that you're not.
Would the officers go forward and on?
Normally to inspect. They wanted to see if those focus and everything was clean. And very seldom they come inside, except maybe on the saddle. But, of course, they always come up and inspected everything. And they took the ship from bow to stern every day. One of them.
One of the mates, usually, or?
Chorus to mates. And, of course, in the morning, the promotional for that, get his orders, whatever they were supposed to do, and he related it to them, to the watch. And the same with the sailmaker, he had his own job. That would either assign the fixed sails to stuff like that. Carpenter had his job. Was always something to fix, you know. So if the sailmaker had too much, the mate would pick the youngest to give him a hatch. He could run a little bit of mouth. To say if there was some striking to do, there would be a neighbor seaman, but there would always also be either one of the deck boys or one of the ordinaries to run out splash.
That's simple.
You could go up at noon, bid commission, of course, and take a hand in shooting the sun and run a little bit about 9 years. But only with permission, no.
Of course.
But you do it the orders give.
Would you do that whether you're on, if you're on watch or when you're off watch?
When you're off watch.
Off watch. Because otherwise you'd be busy.
That's right. He was always busy.
How did you spend your off watch tenor?
Well, for the first thing, you had to wash your clothes. Mend that there was any men to fool. If you had a hard day, well, you went to sleep. But the most of the time in fishing and trade, you could get put in there all night sleep another way by having these turned watches. See, it was 4 men had to be on watch, but if I say there was 8 on the watch, 4 of them would turn in again. You went too much for every 8 battles.
Sure.
But then you could turn right around and go lay down again. You couldn't dress and dress, but you could lay down with your clothes on, and then, of course, when you were off voice, you undressed and went to bed. Then the way that was rotated, you might have 4 nights where you was on watch, and then you might have 4 nights where you didn't spend on your watch. Fixed that in the merchants. That's why you had 1 man at the wheel, 1 man on the lookout, and 1 man was sitting right below. And the hatch of the mate to talk to him. And if there's anything come up, he'll tell him, he'll get the rest of them.
No.
And we all go to work. In case that glass drops or something like that, he might decide to take in the royals and the pagans or something like that, and he'll call him. And the rest of them would come out and he would go to work to make them fast. If they had the lower courses to crew up, we never took in the force about the main, the missing. We throw them up just before, let's say, 12 o'clock midnight and leave them. And then when the other watch come on deck, you stayed with them. And all of you may do it 2 sets fast.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the took couldn't have 10 men to make it fast.
A really big sense.
The same thing if you went about. It took you putting up 2 hours just to coil the rope up out you went about it. Or the braces.
Imagine you got so you knew every line.
You had to.
In the dark.
You had to. The point of man sitting up in a gathering yard an hour down may go a certain line.
Mm-hmm.
You better not go the right one.
Mm-hmm.
in the same way, Charlie, would you know every move to make for a certain evolution, like coming about?
Oh, yeah.
And would everybody do the same thing each time?
No, but you know what's going on. You took turns, but that was a lot.
I see.
And the first thing you had to do when you went about, you had to collect throwers quick. You didn't make them fast, you cooled them up. And then make all the braces run into run. You know, you coordinates to come one inside the arm, you run clear. When he went about, the first thing we did is we go to main missing braces. So those touch the rotate as he come about. We left the Ford on the rope, let Gibson. There was one guy, the second making the captain, he took care of the Gibson, he went about. So when he get up, so far, and I was the whole four top to two back, and the station were two back. Then he hollered up to them to let go, and we threw the sheets out, and we threw the braces out, and had to come.
There we could work on the time again. In terms of schedule, you pretty well explained how a day's watches were set up. Can you give me a little better idea about how the a voyage would flow? You'd start out, say it was a trip from Europe to South America. How much time would be spent in each leg of the voyage?
It all depends. Sometimes, like for instance, to Jordan, Buenos Aires, probably 2 months. Up from Europe to Australia, probably take 90 days. That would depend how we went in.
And this is still something like the format of bar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I was said, don't forget, we had to go where the wind was. We could run a straight course. We made twice the miles of steamer wood.
Mm-hmm.
But he figured on, in those days, that he could beat the steamer. The only thing he couldn't keep is catching.
True.
But he figured on, if a ship could go around the world, and on that trip, average 8.5 knots. He was doing well. Steam on those days could only make 6. But to make 8.5 knots, some days you had to run 16, 17 knots to make up for the days you didn't make. Like in the Darrows, but they quit.
Of course, it didn't make much time.
In the trade, you could average 12 to 14 knots. But when you get down to the Roaring 40s, you could run 16, 17 knots. So they took the average of what you made on that trip. The tape.
How much would time, this port to port, vary for a given route, say for the same route from, I don't know, Falmouth to Sydney or something?
Well, you know what, Tom, I'll get you to understand Falmouth for Queenstown. I suppose the load of that took a load of grain from Australia.
Yeah.
You went to Falmouth for all. Right?
Go better.
That was your first port. And that probably take you between 80 and 90 days. Right?
Mm-hmm. But rarely more than 90 and rarely less than 80?
You could make maybe less, not more. You see, the guy that bought that grain, the company that bought that grain when you left the strike, he may be in Liverpool, right? But he might sell it to a fellow in Rotterdam. he may resell it with a little profit to a guy in London or Hamburg or someplace like that.
In the state?
And the last man that bought it, that's where you was going. You didn't know where you was
going.
So you went into Falmouth, you didn't make the sale.
That's.
You get fresh provision waiting for you, the other that waiting for you. Water,
fresh water.
And you are. Wherever you was going.
So this would be a company aid that would be taking care of this for you?
No, they have a cool company aid that's not report here. And the minute you get that taken care of, then you heat up your anchor, and if the wind was right, you beat it wherever you was going. It may be Hamburg, maybe Rotterdam, maybe London, it may be Liverpool, it may be any time.
Yes.
The same when you left Europe. Let's say you were going to the United States, right? You didn't know if you were going to wind up Boston, New York, Philly, or Baltimore, where you were going. But they had an order place, Delaware Breakwater. That was in between all of them, right? So you ran into Delaware Breakwater, you know what I did? Going into Delaware River, Breakwater.
Outside,
Jackson, Lewis. Thompson. You're in there, anchor, there would be a boat come out, good fresh collision, honey, boil, and your orders. Well, you might get orders to go to New York, you might get orders to go any place. You might lay there for a week before you get your orders. In the meantime, the agent is arranging for a cargo for you.
Correct.
Like, going up to New York or and load it for South America or load it for Australia and load it for any damn trade. Or you might get an order to go to Baltimore. Or you might get an order to go to up to Philly, up the river. If you got up the river, you took a tug. So he had these order ports. When you went someplace, any place else, you know pretty well where you're going. But when you get there, we didn't know where you was going from there. Before you get in there, then your orders could lay in there. We had arranged for a cargo from Silk Silk, such a place to such a place. In other words, you was tapping. Like the steamers to the night of her. That's why your farmer gets such a reputation, Queenstown farmer, because that's where you run in for your orders, where you would find you was going to deliver that mousy grain.
I think Queenstown was the place for
Queenstown farm. It was easy to get into, and you could head for any place from north.
Did you have any favorite port?
There were a lot of favorite ports. There were some beautiful ports. Sydney Harbour was a beautiful port, and so was Rio, and so was San Francisco. Beautiful. Hong Kong was a beautiful.
Sure. Why did you like them?
For the person, you would want a port to go into. And if you wanted anything, it was cheap. Whatever you wanted. And it was open port.
Sure.
You know? Easy to get into. Sure. Easy to get out of.
Yeah.
You could stay in, you could stay out, you never needed to tug. But of course, then you have to down many ports for you, like the Chilean coast, or what the Peruvian coast, you had to lay an anchor outside. You couldn't go into dock. There was no dock, except Cario and Lima, I thought, in Peru. Or sometimes you wouldn't let you into the earth. That's federal operation. You always wrote it. Right in under that. So boys or anchors, the same with all right, Kiki and them, figures and all those ports. You never went into port.
Can lay it outside. Would you get shore leave with the crew?
You get shore leave and you could go in with the furnace to the long government at night. He went in with a full barge and tugs, and then he commits if he had a long pier running straight out in the Pacific. When you come in, the crane would draw a net down. You grab a net, cargo net, and He heaved you up and dropped you on the dock.
Where was that again?
Anywhere?
Over the porch.
Right.
Except Cario. The passengers, you had like a gun door. You're not like you have a new swing sometimes.
Yeah.
It was shaped like a gun door with two stairs. Because teeth four.
Oh.
When they go in with a boat in there, or a barge, whatever they was on, the crane would drop that down on deck and four of them would sit down that and up you went, drop you on the dock and go back and pick up the rest. The only way to get ashore in those.
Caught. Right.
There's no land. There was some landings, but you couldn't, if there was any high seas, you couldn't use them.
So,
the other one was safer.
Did you have favorite ports for shore leave?
Huh?
Did you have favorite ports for shore leave? Same port?
Well, he was good ports. He was all good ports, and all the South American ports were good, and the Australian ports were good. And with many favorite ports. Hong Kong was good. Shanghai was a good port. The Mediterranean, Nazir, and Orion, and those places was by shore leave ports. But of course, they put the head to be back the same night. And then morning, anyway.
What was the first thing?
Back to work at 8 o'clock.
What was the first thing you did when you got ashore?
There's a lot of sights to eat. The most of them wound up in the first spot. I then we went with them and had one beer and beat it.
Back then?
When I was young, later on, I probably had more than one.
The fifth.
And I always like to go sightsee. Like in the Spanish court, you go ashore and like Palmando plays the troop. Especially when you was kids. Get buy a big bag of grapes and orange and everything for about 10 cents. Of course, we like to do that and go back and go and eat them.
Sure.
Anything like that, you know, that was good.
So you usually only had a few hours of on shore.
You used to go ashore every night. But there had to be so many on board. And the Scandinavian ships, as the rule, and the American ships later for hires and men, wait, and skipping them, say, 5 and 4 men stay on board. He didn't measure in his aim.
Exactly.
When you come up and told them, well, there's always somebody that's out there more, and there's always something else there more. They'll stay on board, and the rest will go ashore, and then the next night, maybe it'll be a different way. If you want to, somebody says, no, I want to go ashore, you said, no, in that case, you stay. Right?
Yeah. I see him.
If you did have a chance, he wasn't ashore last night.
Would you be glad to get back to sea, or?
Well, they were always glad to get back to sea, most of them. Get out, brother. To clean up. I've seen the day down the Rio. They happened to go up to the leader of the slave, and
the whole crew, the Marinas and Ness,
and the mate, the house carries the boy, look at him, he said, D. You're pretty rough shape, the mate says, has skipper said, that's all right. He says, had a few saves, let's get out of here. They get 3 bucks for silver. But he didn't get anything playing a thief.
Yeah.
That's the rule he made out pretty good. You know how to take care of himself. You know the trick, you know, when anything happened, he always hit first, hit hard and walk.
How far ahead would you have to? Well, how far ahead would you be able to predict the weather when you're on the ship? You use the glass a lot.
He used the glass very much. But it was watched every hour. But the skippers and the mates, all the time, he could smell it. If you ever notice, when it's good weather, the guns were dropped back at once in a while, they land on the sea back is put on them. You'd be there. But the minute it started to be there, dirty water, you'd all come up and you're sitting on the east side of the ship.
Sure.
And you're staying there to the town row or so, and when your sea will start to drop back at turn, you're now to a door. And the skippers know, don't they? Mm. But you follow the barometer very close.
What else do they look for when they walk the clouds pretty closely?
You watch the clouds very close, and then you watch the sunset come down. That's what that thing is. Pretty good. It could be had no radio. But they couldn't get a better report. And of course, down the roaring 40s, that of course it was cut down for it.
Cut it.
And we have to run down there with about 16 saints instead of 10 trees.
Your cookie.
All of a sudden, back after, you see, gets like the snow, but there wasn't snow. There was spoon brought up these things we call them white squares, and that'll hit you. And that you had no warning.
Good.
So you hope then we can stay.
Good.
And then if I would have did. He lasted about 20 minutes.
What was the worst storm you ever saw?
You saw them all over. I've seen bad storms in the North Atlantic. I've seen some bad ones, Cape Good Hope and Cape Horn. Any place in the roaring 40s, you could expect it.
Mm-hmm.
But between you and me, after a while, it's as I used to do. You then you just take it as a cop. You know?
Yeah.
And that's the road we are prepared for. Not when I had the score down south, we could have been there for them, but that's the road we could.
Were you ever on a ship that was really in trouble?
Well, I was Viking was in trouble one time. We get knocked over. And lost a lot of strength, and we got to straighten out. And we worked that night, next day, and the next night, and by morning we had on safe drive up again and beat it.
So all you lost were civilians, huh?
We lost some saints. We lost a bunch of menageries around Cape Good Hope. And the squall. Same. But they say by that time you used to use to it, so you took it like one of the day's work.
Sure.
You know?
So it didn't bother you
once you gotten used to it.
How long? It didn't bother you though.
How long did it take to get used to it?
Well, after a couple of years. First trip, I had to crush the Pierce Canyon, even before that.
So the first couple of times you'd be scared a little?
No, when I was scared, I was too damn busy to be scared. Like one old lady one time told me, it says, this cut over the ass, and we said he did a lot of praying. And then I said, well, that's what he did. You can bet your bottom dollar on one thing. He said, what? Somebody else had to do his work. But you don't have time, Doctor. He laughed and walked out. He said, now, you know, I know that my husband is following us around. He knew.
Yeah. That's something I wondered about. If somebody wasn't doing their job quite right, or if somebody was not pulling their weight.
In those ships, you had to, because it depends on each other. You couldn't have one leg that high. If he did, he didn't last. We can bet the bottom dollar on that one. Next port, we get rid of him somehow.
Sure.
But after all, he was like a good teeny. He played together, bounced together, and the all in all, he had to work together. Because the quicker he did it, the better he was off. Same thing when you run into a squall, the quicker you get those saints fast, get ready for it, the better you are. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So, everybody would work together to code one thing, and sometime a couple of us would get into an argument, a little hot. We took two of them and dropped. cut them out and bag if they finished it up and they didn't come back in.
Well, after you get to work up.
Well, they might have a black eye or something.
The news came out in the watch and so on.
And there was one thing, you never saw one locking a thief chest in it. But the door was open. And when they come ashore, they would take the money and threw it up on the shelf. And when they went ashore again, we picked it up. But you know, there was never anything missing.
Sorry.
Well, I guess if somebody did miss something, you know,
it had to be on the ship.
Had to be on the ship.
Open the tree up. Stand, take, took.
I do.
If you had it wet, I could open it.
Then.
Do it on the whip. Let me try it.
You think that.
I'm Jay. Dying that you're right, Charlie.
Hey, Brad.
A little bit of moisture on the skin.
Okay. Yeah. Spit on.
Thank you. Okay.
Make a good one, Mark.
And I'm no thing I represent you all, Mark. I'll get you it.
Good. Good. In other words, if you like,
well, it was a very good ride.
If you didn't like it, you might as well quit. Get off. With something that.
Seen a lot of places, Charlie. What was your favorite?
My favorite? In those days?
Yeah.
I had to die many of them.
Favorite what?
Now you take Copenhagen. Copenhagen, Hamburg, Liverpool, and Rotterdam in Europe. What favorite place? If you have a good time, rarely. Between you and me, there was very, very few sailors that liked French port. Some did, but not many. But you like?
Oh, Mark.
A lot of the. You liked a lot of the Mediterranean ports. Myself, I like Rio and I like Lima, Peru, Valparaiso, Buenos Aires. Of course, the favorite port was always home port, Copenhagen. Right?
No, Pint.
And you could eat anyone?
Or tough fighting it.
Well, I think that's enough for tonight.
Later, when just Charlie and I were in the kitchen freshening our drinks, Charlie explained in his best confidential tone that he hadn't wanted to say so on the tape, but that the reason sailors didn't like the French ports was because of the French girls. All they wanted was money, money, money. In the other European ports, especially the German ones and in Australia, the girls weren't after just money. They were after a good time, too. Remember what Charlie said about the favorite European ports. You could have a good time, very reasonable.
He commented also later on about discipline. He said that the Scandinavian ships were pretty strict, that if a sailor weren't quite pulling his weight, he paused, he'd get a kick from behind the missing ship team. He said no, that they had more refined ways to keep the crew in line.
He went on to say that there was one of the mates who would go down one side and trip all the buntlines on that side. You see, the buntlines have to be left slack so that the sail doesn't get puckered. And in fact, they'll have a bit of spun yarn or be tucked under a jackstay or something to keep them slack up top from the weight of the line that leads down to deck. And this mate would go along and trip all these, and that would put a pucker in the sails. And then when the offender, before he left watch, he had to go up and overhaul all those buttons. That would be the order, go up and overhaul those buttons. And it would take him half an hour, Charlie said, just to get up. You'd have to go up, start at the Royals, and come all the way back down and overhaul all those buttons. Be half an hour late getting off your watch, and you'd be good for a week, he said. Of course, you were always trying to get away with something. Everybody is, he thought. So that was Saturday night with Charlie Anderson.